3:06 in the morning, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you until 5 a.m. Natalie B. Compton is a reporter for the Washington Post covering travel. She joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Natalie, how are you this morning?
I am great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being awake. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I imagine that's not usually your plan on a Saturday.
You know what? There's a first for everything.
Well, I was going to say, maybe like a year ago, you would have said, well, I'm just getting home from the bar. I was out for a late night or I was out having fun. But now I would say, shame on you, Natalie. You can't be out doing those things.
All bets are off in a pandemic year. So
that's
if you want to be awake at 3, go for it.
Yeah, yeah. There's no rules anymore. But it is interesting. You write an article about the fact that like a year ago, if you didn't travel, people would be like, oh, you don't travel. And we used to look down and we used to be so excited to get out and travel and do things and see the world. But now it's really reversed where some people are still trying to take advantage of the ability to travel right now or the low cost in some situations or the lack of crowds. And you are seeing that people are really... I feel like we're getting, not that it's necessarily wrong, because people need to pick it up and wear the mask and do all the things we should be doing. But it also feels like we are getting very confrontational in our judgment on people who are not doing things the way we think they should be doing them.
Oh, yeah. There's been just this new wave of shame in a lot of different ways during the pandemic. There's, like you said, masks are a very hot issue between people. There's mask shaming, there's social distance shaming. And what I've been looking at lately is travel shaming, which, like you said, before the pandemic, that meant people would shame you because you hadn't been to enough places. Or I saw travel shaming refer to if people kept going to places that people thought weren't cool or they weren't branching out enough, they would get travel shame for that. And now, when the tension between people who think, let's open the economy or things are opening up, let's go travel, let's take advantage of these flight deals, meet the people who say, no, we still have to stay at home or cases are on the rise, there is shaming that's going down there. And it's a confusing time because both people feel very heated about the topic.
Yeah, they definitely do. And there's just so much to try to figure out on how we should, you know, handle that. I mean, what's your general feeling? I feel like, listen, you know, if I can get away to Mexico and come back and then keep to myself or whatever it is, I know that, you know, you should be quarantining, you should be doing things if you do certain things with travel. What's your take on it? Because I understand the other side too, because so many of us are not doing enough. We feel like, listen, we're going to live this way forever if we don't all pull together and finally get this thing under control. And it seems like, you know, that's really on us, the people, to do that, because there's not... you know, all the states are different. Everything's different. The leadership, everything doesn't make us all pull together and do it. So it's kind of incumbent upon us, the individual, to all pull together and say, okay, let's really knock this thing out. Let's do this right. So when people aren't following along with that, I understand that people on the other side are like, come on already, people.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. I think that the more people I spoke with and saw a lot of the travel that was drawing rage from people, and even in my own life, the people who I saw who I felt the most intense feeling about their travel, they were hopping around from city to city, partying, no masks, being with a lot of different people at once, and you're like, what world are you living in? This isn't the time for that. And then there are people who are taking trips, going to see family and quarantining or getting tested before they travel or going to very remote places where I feel is a very different vibe. Something that shows I'm being conscious of what's happening in the world. I'm not trying to spread the virus, and I'm going to try to do this carefully. So I do think that travel is possible, and safe travel is possible. However, not everyone is doing that at all. There's a range of types of travel going on right now.
Well, and the other issue is, no matter how careful you're being, you just don't know what you're going to run into. You've got to... You know, if you're traveling by plane, there's only so much you can control there. And even if you're traveling by car, you've got to stop at places, you got to stop at times. And, you know, just so little is known about this damn virus still. Everything keeps changing. We, you know, the how long is the immunity good for after you have it? And all of these things, I think, leaves things so up in the air that if we could just have a good grasp and understanding of this thing, maybe we could get a better grasp on, okay, we could travel in certain ways and not be so upset with people, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. And even with testing, I think if we had a better system for getting a quick test, also knowing you could get the test and you got it too early in your virus run too, right? So maybe you got tested before you traveled, but it was too early to get a test. I think we had a lot of testing that could improve the situation for travel, but you're right. And we don't know a lot about this thing. So we're all kind of fumbling in the dark as we figure out how to live without a vaccine for now. But it's clear that most people do not want to be in lockdown anymore, and they're trying to figure out how to live their lives again.
You mentioned in the article one a travel writer, Lola Mendez, who's traveled nonstop kind of for 5 years as a travel writer. And she really is, like, personally, like, she, and I think a lot of people can understand this, you know, you're not necessarily worried about yourself, but what if I bring something to somebody else, a relative, an older parent, something like that, and that causes an actual death, like walking around with that for the rest of your life. My business partner, his wife is type 1 diabetic, and he has not been to work, and I've seen him in person for about 5 minutes total in the last 6 months, because I am certainly not ever going to be the one. I don't want to carry that around for the rest of my life, and I think a lot of people feel that way.
Right, and for the people who are compelled to do travel shaming, that seems to be coming sometimes from a place of concern. They are trying to protect other people. They're seeing cases rise in their region or in vulnerable areas, and they see this as a life or death situation. So they see someone getting on a plane and they think, how could you be so reckless? Don't you know there are people who are immunocompromised out there who you may be coming in contact with, or the person that you come in contact with may come in contact with them? And I really get why these people have a drive to reach out and try to make people change their behavior. But I spoke with the author of Shame and Guilt on what exactly does shaming someone do. And what she said is, although it can be a very natural desire to want to shame someone into changing their behavior, that's often not the way to go. And they are not going to react the way you're hoping. They will often get very defensive. They're going to be reinforced in their behavior, and they often place the blame on other people. So you're going to shame them for traveling. They're going to say, no, I'm going to keep traveling. And her advice was the better thing to do was to sort of ease some guilt into the situation, try to encourage them to have safer behavior,
ease
and
some
say,
guilt
you know, it would be
situation.
Great. Yeah, it would be great to stay home, or if you traveled, could you wear a mask? You know, in my family, we have yada, 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 people who are at risk. It would be great if you could wear a mask. So being gentle and not shamey, because shaming is not going to do anything.
Well, I think, as in most things in life, right, we're not going to respond really well to being shamed about something.
Right.
But I love the phrase, let's just ease a little guilt into this. Let's just ease that right in there. Not beat you over the head with the guilt. We're going to ease it in. And I think you're fooling with your rights to then say, well, oh, I would be like, oh, that's so cool that you got to do that, but I need you to wear a mask now because blah, blah, blah. Just be very blunt about it. I wouldn't even ask. I'd be like, well, you got to wear a mask then. You know that, right? And just kind of be very matter of fact about it. And if they refuse, then okay, well, then you don't need to be here. I guess it's really tough because in work situations, things like that, you know, people have different ways. They got to go back to work, or they got to deal with people. You know, here in Chicago, Natalie, our mayor Lori Lightfoot has enacted these 14-day quarantines that people are expected to undergo if they travel to one of the hotspot states and then return if you're there for more than 24 hours. And the states kind of keep changing, coming off on and off the list, depending on what's going on in each state. But you know, here we're expecting people to do a 14-day quarantine, and they're threatening that they'll fine them or do things to them. It's really hard to track that down and trace it and really crack down on somebody, but that's what they're really pushing for.
That's the other thing about travel right now, is it's very complicated, and there might be restrictions in the place that you're leaving from, where you're going. I've seen lots of examples of people not following quarantine restrictions when they do travel somewhere. That's another thing that, you know, gets a rise out of people on social media. But it's not the same to travel right now. And one of the people I interviewed for the story is a travel writer, Matt, and he went to Disneyland. He went to Charleston. He went to a resort in Pennsylvania. And throughout all of his travels during the pandemic, he was saying that there is still some joy to it, but there's also all of these new stresses, travel shame, not even the issue there for him. It was really just that you're kind of on edge. You're dealing with people through plexiglass. You're always kind of aware of this virus. But then I also get that we're just trying to figure this thing out, and you just have to have your phone on you all the time so you can keep up to date with all the state restrictions and try to follow the rules where you're going.
Yeah, that's for sure. Can we talk real quick about one of your other recent articles?
Sure.
I think this was your article. I know you retweeted it, that there's a Four Seasons at Disney World where you can have your kids go to school.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was having a ball just reading about all of the amenities that if you were a kid in the pandemic, your life is not going so well, and suddenly your parents turn to you and say, we're going to go stay at the Four Seasons at Disney World, and you're going to go to school there. They have a pretty great setup if you have the money to afford such a thing, but yeah. They will oversee your child's remote learning in a spacious, airy setting that is no more than 6 kids per class. And while you're out getting a massage or lounging in a lazy river, your kids are being chaperoned by people who usually ran the kids club there. And they also have extracurricular, so they'll take you out for PE, which might be golf lessons or tennis, culinary classes, and then help you log back into your class while all of your classmates are miserable at home. So it's crazy.
This is pretty fascinating. So it's not like, you know, big time tutors. It's the people that were running the kids club, but they will at least help you get through. So you're still in your class back home, but if it's remote, you can just log on from there and they'll help get you through it and do all these things. And are people doing this just like for a week? Like, oh, let's take a vacation. They'll still be in school. Or are people like, you know, moving into the Four Seasons for 4 months to get through till the holidays?
Whew, I wish I could be the person who was staying there for 4 months during this time. It's unclear how many people are actually taking advantage of these promotions. We've seen that hotels across the country, the Four Seasons also in Mexico, is running a similar program to do remote learning from their resort in Punta Mita. And it's a way that hotels are trying to draw in business at a time when so many hotels are suffering. The Hotel Association of America was saying that many hotels across America right now are operating not even breaking even, not enough to pay their debts. So I get why hotels are trying to figure out how to get business right now. And not all of the examples of this are as high end as the Four Seasons. There's a Kimpton in Palm Springs that is doing something for a more reasonable $200-something a night instead of $500 to $2,000 a night of the Four Seasons. But while people are remotely working and they could take their kids somewhere because their kids don't need to be physically in school, there's this new option for long-term travel. But you're right, there are longer stays going on because you don't have to adhere to the same weekend or kids' school schedule anymore. You can go for as long as you want.
It sounds like this is turning now in my head into like an SNL skit. So you got what do you got? We got your Four Seasons. That's the top of the line. You got your everything. Then we got the Kimpton model. Now the kids aren't going to learn quite as much, but they're still going to get through school. Then you got your Motel 6, and that's basically a chalkboard out by the empty pool.
Definitely.
What do you think is going to happen? You mentioned how bad things are for the travel industry, and I know it is decimated. What are the long-term implications that you see as far as, you know, the airlines and the cruise industry and all these hotels who are going to have to cut back so much over the next year or two as they try to get through this and we still can't get people back on the road? What kind of long-term effects do you think we're going to see?
I think the bigger companies like the airlines and major hotel chains will be hurt by this. And we're seeing that come October 1st, so many people are going to be furloughed in the airline industry. And that's something that everyone's been paying attention to in the travel industry right now, these terrible furloughs. But I feel very sad when I look at one of my favorite parts of travel, which is bars and restaurants. And right now, there are so many bars or restaurants that were people's favorite part of their trip, this little hole in the wall that they stumbled upon, and it made their trip so incredible. And those places are dropping like flies now. They're, I mean, just very sad. Every day there's a new closure of a place that you thought, how could that close? That was the best restaurant in Los Angeles. That was the best bar in New York. And they're dying. And there's not really a plan right now. While Congress seems to be helping out a lot of different people at the moment, the bars and restaurants haven't found the help they need to survive, and they are disappearing. So the landscape of where you eat and drink when you travel is going to be vastly different. Of course, people will reopen and take advantage of lots of maybe lowered rents once they do start to look again, or new spaces, or and lots of labor to be found once people feel safe working again. But all of our favorite places that exist now are at risk to shut down. And I think people aren't realizing that, even though they see bars or restaurants opening up on sidewalk cafes, we're going into a season where that's no longer possible. And even while it was, that wasn't bringing in enough revenue for bar and restaurant owners. It was a lot more work and a lot less revenue. So they're struggling, and I don't know what the right answer is. They just need help.
What do you feel personally about travel right now? Are you getting out there more than you used to, or are you still feeling, you know, what's your sense as a travel person who's definitely enmeshed in the idea of travel? What are your feelings right now on getting out there and traveling?
Well, I do not feel comfortable yet getting on a plane, mostly out of the concern of not wanting to unintentionally be spreading coronavirus. I think that right now people are feeling pretty good about not catching or spreading the virus on a plane, but it's when you're going through those more crowded areas like an airport or a bus terminal or a train station where the risk is higher for spreading it or catching it. So I don't feel very comfortable about that, but you might laugh, but I'm in a car right now at a campsite. I found a service that I wrote about in months past called Hip Camp, and it's the Airbnb of campsites. And by campsites, I'm using that very loosely because this is just some guy's farm. And it's 9 acres. I have my sister's dogs in the back of my sister's car, not even my car, not even my dogs, packed a tent. There's no contact that you have with anyone. You don't have to interact with the host. I just pitched a tent in the middle of a field, and it feels like this is the safest travel right now. It's not maybe everyone's idea of a vacation, but it's really nice to be outdoors for a few days.
So are you completely by yourself except for your sister's dogs?
Yeah, I am. I'm in a car on the side of the road talking to you on the phone from my rural campsite. This is travel in 2020 for me.
So that's very fascinating to me, because I'd be scared to death to be alone, and I don't mean to scare you, and it's almost sun up where you're at, so I'm not as worried, but like, are you good about doing that? Because if I was alone, I appreciate having the dogs with, but I think I'd I'd be up all night, like, freaked out.
So I did this completely alone 2 months ago, but instead of having a car and dogs, I did it with my bike. I wanted to try to see if I could do a completely contactless trip. No gas stations, no grocery stores, nothing. So I strapped my tent to the back of my, just like a very standard bicycle, not a mountain bike, not a professional grade anything, packed a backpack and biked to the closest national park, and I was completely alone. And that was definitely more nerve-wracking, just having no cell service and being alone in this big, bad world. But it was great. It was thrilling. It gave me more confidence to do different kinds of trips. But you're right. You have to be conscious of the fact that being a person alone carries different risks. I shared my location with friends and family, same for this trip, just so they knew where I was.
Yes. Good call.
I am carrying a knife, although I don't know how to use it.
hold on 1 second. Hold on. I got a knife here. Let me figure this out.
Oh, excuse me. Do you mind if I get my knife out?
Hold on. I'm going to stab you. Hold on. Let me figure out how this opens. Can you open this for me? Can you help me?
Yeah. Well, yep.
That sounds
betting
really,
on that.
Really, that sounds really cool. I mean, is it also being alone like that in a place like that and desolate? I know there's certain worries, and I'm glad you shared, because I think the whole time I'd be like, they're never going to find me. But but I also think that would offer a chance for really deep reflection too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The only time that I was a little concerned in the last 12 hours was suddenly one of the dogs started growling very ominously into the dark, and I thought, what is that about? Why are you doing that? But for the most part, it has felt very, very refreshing in a time when it is so stressful. I think travel is one of my favorite parts of life, and there are so many different elements of it that I think make people a better person. You're being challenged with overcoming different obstacles, and you're making your brain work in different ways of navigating new landscapes and figuring out how to pitch your tent in the dark because you left too late after work and now you're trying to find the spot in a field. So it's been great, and I recommend it to everyone who enjoys the outdoors.
Natalie B. Compton writes about travel for the Washington Post. Follow her on Twitter at NatBCO, at NatBCO. Natalie Compton, it was great to meet you. I hope we talk again.
Yeah, thank you. And you can also follow along on Instagram at that same handle if you'd like to see any more camping shenanigans.
We will check them out and make sure that Natalie stays safe all weekend at NATBCO on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks so much, Natalie.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too. Stay safe. News is next, 720 WGN.